Atkins, and I'm a writer and commentator.
Tiffany, thank you very much indeed for talking to the History Reclaim podcast series today. We're very pleased to have you as a guest because your books are well known. Just take us through what you've written in the past and what you're writing now.
Well, my first book was Contesting Human Remains in Museum Collections, The Crisis of Cultural Authority. And that catchy title should indicate that it came out of a sociology PhD, but what it effectively looked at was the way in which museums have become dominated by debates over the retention and the repatriation of human remains. And I was particularly interested in how that came to be an issue and why, in many cases, museum professionals decided and wanted to repatriate human remains.
And you wrote that in a way before the subject itself became topical, and we're now mostly all of us familiar with that term, repatriation. So would you like to lay claim to predicting there would be an epidemic of repatriations?
It's funny watching it now. I must admit that I thought some of the underlying trends would continue. And the most important one is I situate this as a crisis of cultural authority and what museums are for. So one of the most important things that's driving this is that museums have, in a way, lost their sense of purpose and are looking for a new one. And so in many cases, the claims for return are promoted from within the institution. And I knew that would continue because repatriating doesn't solve the underlying dynamic, which is that museums are purposeless and looking for a new purpose. And they've lost confidence in their enlightenment purpose, and so they're looking for a new one, and repatriating doesn't solve that problem.
Yes, I was just going to mention some of the articles that we're more familiar with, newspaper headlines that have been repatriated, including the Nigerian Benin bronzes, the Elgin marbles. There's quite a long list of them now, isn't there?
There's a long list, but often those newspaper articles make it sound as if a lot is happening, when actually the claims made are low. There is a turning point with the Benin bronzes, and I actually think that that's not all a bad thing. I don't think repatriation itself is a problem. I'm interested in the claims that are made for what it can achieve and why it's happened now, and whether that those are kind of good social developments.
And do you think, to answer the why now question, which I was about to ask you, is that about political correctness? Is it about something society is going through at a deeper level?
I think it's been building for a number of decades. And the first and most important thing is this kind of uncertainty about the purpose of an institution, and actually you can a museum institution. You can also see this in universities. You know, what are they for? And many of the truth claims that we used to kind of pursue, the kind of Enlightenment model, have been severely questioned. And so they're no longer confident about that kind of dissemination and understanding of the past in terms of Enlightenment ideals. The second is the way in which the past has become the focus for political controversy and activism. So, and I think that sort of comes out of you sort of really see it in the late 80s and early 90s, this trend towards apologising, you know, Tony Blair apologising for the potato blight. And I think that's become very much mainstream. And I think it comes out of really an end of future-orientated politics that means the past becomes this site of battleground, really. But it's entirely toxic now, the way in which the past is presented. Whereas I think in the past, it might have been more idealised. So we've sort of gone from a golden ageism about the past to the opposite, to everything is poison and toxic.
And is it also associated with guilt, whether that's guilt about slavery and the controversy over statues of slave owners, or guilt by the museums about what had happened in the past and how they might atone for it? Is it about atonement?
I think there's a desire to do the right thing. I also think there's a certain fear about not being seen to do the right thing. But I think ultimately it still comes back to this sense in which they're no longer confident in, you know, showing the past to the public and discussing it. It's become heavily moralized. And until they can kind of go back to that purpose, these debates will continue. And museum, in a way, will just, what they're trying to do is legitimize themselves. And they're legitimizing themselves over kind of the new authority, which is apologizing and finding the worst thing you can find about the past and kind of displaying it and talking about it.
And do the public support repatriation if they know what it means? I mean, there tends to be a left-right divide on the issue of statutes and slave traders, regardless of what plaque Nadine Dorris puts up, the culture secretary. But do we know what the public thinks? Have there been any surveys?
Well, I should say historically it was the right who were more interested in repatriation, because they had the sense in which a particular culture owned their own culture. As to now, do the public support it? It's volatile. So after Brexit, believe it or not, people were very against repatriation because they thought repatriation was a kind of assertive nationalism. You know, the Greeks wanting it back was this assertion of nationalism, and nationalism was bad. That's gone post Black Lives Matters, and I think people are open to it and want, again, they want to do the right thing, but it's a very volatile thing. And I don't think the left and right thing is that straightforward, actually. I think the way in which the right are often described as being the instigators of the culture war and proposing things stay in museums isn't entirely right. I think the most important thing, though, is that this is something that those who once would have proposed kind of a curiosity-driven institution are on the back foot, and they're the ones who perhaps are silent.
Well, let's give you two quick-fire questions now, and thank you for informing us about this debate, both in the shorter and longer term. But quick-fire, do you think repatriation is always wrong?
No, I think it should be done on a case-by-case basis. And I think we should... I mean, I end the Keeping the Marbles book by saying we need to think about where's best for the object. And that's in terms of preservation, truth and knowledge and access. And in a way, you sort of want to take the politics out of it. That won't answer the question easily every time. So the Parthenon sculptures, there isn't... kind of, not everybody is going to be happy. There's not a kind of scientific test laboratory that you can do for that. I think the Benin bronzes, it's right. There are very few in Africa. There are hundreds, if not thousands, in Europe and America. So why not? And I think you just have to sort of try and take a bit of the politics and claims making out of it, neutralize it almost, and think, where can we better understand the cultures that made these artifacts? In terms of truth, so where do we learn most about them and the cultures that made them? Preservation, where are they cared for? And access, who gets to see them, whether it's researchers or the public? And perhaps we can kind of take some of the heat out of it. So I'm all for repatriation. I have softened a bit. I had to kind of think seriously about what I was arguing, and that is the object matters, where's best for the object.
And does it repair the hurt and damage done in the past? That's the leading question, isn't it? Does it actually atone?
I think rather than atone for the past, which I don't think you can do, I think you can certainly research it. And I think one of the problems today is that that's quite hard because history has become so moralised. And in a way, this debate sometimes adds to that moralization. So no, you can't atone for the past, but I think probably the best thing you can do is try and understand who created the artifacts, what they meant to people then, and what they mean to people now. And that's an opening up of knowledge. That's what museums can do, and that's what I think objects can do.
And what about the latest headline on the Smithsonian Institute getting rid of all its Benin bronzes? I mean, will more museums do the same? You did just mention that you felt there were too many in Europe and not enough in Africa, but will that now lead to an escalation of repatriations of the bronzes?
I think that that will happen, and there. I mean, there's been a Ben and Diala group working on that for some time. There's certain practical difficulties in terms of where they'll go, and also the legal obstacles. But I think that that's entirely navigable. I think the more important thing is that that itself isn't a problem. That could be quite a good thing. You know, objects have many lives. They don't have to stay in one museum. They can go to other places and influence and connect and do all sorts of good things. The thing that's driving this, though, is the kind of the insecurity and defensiveness of what museums are for. And unless that's solved, it doesn't matter whether the object's in the museum or not, because they're no longer serving their purpose of spreading enlightenment.
And in that case, does it mean that, if you like, it's a trend? We now look at the past differently. Aren't these trends an evolution? And they're a generational evolution, because generations think differently. And there's technological change too. So whatever museum a bronze is in, or an Elgin marble, we now go online to look at them too. So isn't this all something that was bound to happen and that we shouldn't resist? It will lead to more cooperation in society, perhaps a better, kinder society when we really understand the history of these objects.
Well, on the technology point, I think it's really interesting that during COVID, people didn't really want to see online artifacts. They wanted to see the real thing. And, you know, I think no matter how good digital is, that will always remain the case. I mean, I love museums. I never look at the websites except to check what time they open. You want that kind of encounter, and that's what museums do. They're like a kind of time machine, and they're physical, you know, rather than in the cloud. I think what's happening with the past, though, is something a little bit more concerning. And I just think it's become so, history as a discipline has become so moralized. That means it's much more difficult to understand it, actually, because you have to have the right answer. And I think sometimes the response to that is to kind of do a mirror opposite. So rather than everything being bad, you kind of get this, but it was good. And that's more about today than it is about the past. So I think instead we need to kind of free history a little bit, sort of get rid of some of the moralism, kind of continue a kind of rational inquiry, and stop turning to history and the past for the solutions to the present, and be much more future orientated. Otherwise, we just, in a way, we lose a real understanding of what the past was and why it's different to the present.
And is that where we are now with your book, which I know was a BBC Radio 4 series previously, but Strangers and Intimates, The Rise and Fall of the Private Life. When are you going to publish it? And again, why did you write it? It's on the same theme, really, isn't it?
I have to say, I don't think it is. And I mean, maybe it is to outsiders. It's very difficult when you're writing something to actually see it afresh. It's quite interesting looking at Keeping Their Marbles and contesting human remains now and thinking about whether you would write it now. You see things that you don't usually see when you're a writer. So it should be, I'm still writing it, Strangers and Intimates, The Rise and Fall of Private Life. And it is it's looking at the, as a long view of the public-private divide and privacy. And I actually think one of the things that you have in contemporary discussions is a focus on privacy as being something that's taken away by technology. And the internet is seen as kind of decisive. And whilst I look at the way in which it is decisive, I think many of the trends, the kind of the blurring of the border between public and private happened earlier in the 1970s. And then I go back to the beginning of where I think and argue public private life came from, which is sort of out of the English Civil Wars and toleration. So no marbles and no Ben and bronzes. And we'll have to see whether people can see the links between the books or not. At the moment, I just want to finish it.
Well, we'll let you finish it in a moment. But you've been incredibly reasonable throughout this podcast. So can I just ask, What gets you hot under the collar, Tiffany? What is it when you pick up a newspaper, whether it's statues, bronzes, or something about privacy and also social media? Because, you know, that really is a hot topic today. But what is it that gets you personally hot under the collar and jumping up and down?
Well, it's a good question, because if you listened to me on the radio a few years ago about Pen and Bronzes or the Parthenon, I would be much more hot on the collar, under the collar, than I am now. And I think my views have softened, but I also think the debate has changed. I think it has become so polarised and shallow, and people aren't talking to each other, and they're also not really listening, and they're not looking, I think, at taking a step back. And so that's what I'm trying to do now. Whether in a few years' time that changes and I'm much more shouty, it's entirely plausible. And as people who know me very well, they know that I'm shouty in private.
And just this final question, which is, if we're looking at the world of museums and what happens within museums, what cultural labels they give to their objects and artefacts, might some people scratch their head and say, why can't the museums of the world cooperate? Why do they have to say it's my object or it's your object? Why do they have to own an object?
They have to own it in the name of the public and future generations to care for it, because it's unique, because it's valuable. But you also, if you often go to museums and art galleries, you will see this object is not on display because it's somewhere else. There's a hell of a lot of cooperation that goes on behind the scenes, and that's often just not really reflected in the headlines. But, you know, research continues and is ongoing on the Parthenon, despite disagreements over who owns it and where it should be. Research is being done cooperatively all the time, so we should be thankful for that.
And are any of these trends, I should have asked this earlier, related to empire?
It's a tricky question, because it certainly appears to be on value that there's a reckoning going on, and you know, maybe there is to a degree, and maybe that's about time. But one of the things that I find really odd is that sort of the louder it gets in the discussion about this sort of empire, the less you understand about it. And I don't mean in terms of whether it's a good or a bad thing. I'm not entirely comfortable with the way in which that discussion has become foregrounded. But you just don't necessarily learn that much. I might be overstating it a bit, but I don't think so. And I think the problem is that discussions about the present are being masked by apparently being about the past and being about empire, when I don't think they are. They're more kind of groups competing to dominate the public square or to gain authority from being seen to be a victim. So that might sound a little bit abstract and confusing, but I think there's something odd going on with the discussion about the past, that you just have to ask, are we learning that much about the past, or are we just being told off?
I think that's a very good place to leave it, because I must come back to you in a few months' time and see if by the time you've ended your book, Strangers and Intimates, The Rise and Fall of Private Life, that perhaps you will have a more conclusive answer to us. But on the other hand, it is a very interesting place to leave this podcast. So, Tiffany Jenkins, thank you very much indeed for talking to the History Reclaimed podcast series today. I've enjoyed it very much.
Thank you.